Welcome to the Magic and Mindfulness Podcast. You're joining me, Amy Maxwell, on my journey of understanding the world of light magic in order to cultivate mindful living. I'm so excited for you to join me on this path of discovery. Hi everyone, welcome back to the second half of season 3. It's so lovely that you're listening and tuning back in today as I'm speaking to Amy of Temple of the Feminine. Amy is a somatic sexual healing coach and works predominantly in the feminine arts, where she's really pushing boundaries and societal norms in order to normalize how we connect and speak about our bodies. And as you'll hear from within the episode, I myself find it quite uncomfortable and taboo to talk about my own sexual experiences, and especially being a British person, we tend to shy away or just get embarrassed about speaking about sex and naming our own body parts. But I feel like sex magic and female pleasure is not talked about enough. So for today's episode, I really had to push myself out of my comfort zone in order to speak more openly about topics that, as a society, we often just shy away from. However, just a note of caution, as we do push the boundaries a little on this episode, if you're listening and have experienced sexual trauma, please do tread lightly, as this might be a potentially triggering episode. We also don't hold back when it comes to talking about naming our genitalia in full names, and there are a lot of swear words used in this episode. Okay, so if you're still deciding to stay, today we'll be exploring topics like experiencing orgasms and masturbation as women without shame, unpacking and getting empowered by the words like yoni and pussy, and discussing why we often don't explore or want to talk about how sexuality and our spiritual journey can often intertwine. I also want to say a thank you to Rose Tulips Tea, the sponsor of today's episode. And as I was recording this episode, I was drinking their Black Label Tea, which is a combination of flowers and herbs that challenge your taste buds and infuse flowers for feminine properties. I love that this tea is designed for active and energetic personalities, a little bit like myself and Amy of Temple of the Feminine. Plus, as someone on my sober curious journey for over a year now, I really enjoy that the Black Label Tea can be consumed as part of a mocktail combination or used as a beautiful garnish. Rose Tulips is sourced with sustainable herbs and flowers that have natural healing properties for boosting the immune system. And for listeners, you get 20% off your purchase and a free sample with every order, so you can experience the different herbal flower combinations. You can find the link in the show notes and simply enter the code MAGICTEA for 20% off your order. We've linked the website and code in the show notes so that you can try it out for yourself. So thank you, Rose Tulips, for sponsoring this episode. It's a conversation for pushing boundaries and societal norms with Amy of Temple of the Feminine. So let's do it. Let's start the show. So hi, Amy, welcome to the podcast today. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm good, thank you. Thank you for having me on here.
Yes, I'm so happy to have you, another Amy as well, the first ever Amy, which is always a bit confusing. But thank you so much for joining me. And yeah, today we're going to talk about cultivating shame-free and authentic intimacy and pleasure, and particularly when it comes to tapping into and understanding more about the yoni or pussy. And so we're going to talk a bit more about that as well, and our sacred sexuality. So it's a topic, I know we were just chatting a little bit before we click record, but I really wanted to have you on this podcast because it is a sort of topic, and from what I see from you posting as well, it's just another lens of spirituality and connection that I think it is really good to talk about, because I don't know, also being, I know we're both English, but I still feel quite sort of, I don't know, like subdued and sensitive and want to be more open to these topics, but maybe I'm not so much. So I'm really happy that we've got you here to talk to us about it.
Yeah, thank you. And I think, you know, I can imagine a lot of people listening resonate with you, and I definitely was in that place. And yeah, and that's one of the reasons I do this work. Like, someone's got to be speaking about it.
Yeah.
Someone's got to like show up for it. So yeah, thank you for sharing your piece around that, because I think that's really relevant to so many of us.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I hope so. I hope people relate to it. But no, I hope by the end of this chat, I'm going to be feeling more open and just like empowered to like talk about this stuff more, because that's the place I would really like to get to. And actually, Amy, I would love to know, because I have my Venus in Scorpio, which is also like quite a sexual place to be, an intense place to be. Actually, I wonder what your star sign is.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, astrology is not my strength. It's not my area, but I can tell you. So my sun is Leo.
Okay.
My rising is Libra and my moon is Sagittarius.
Cool.
I do know that my Venus is in Gemini, but what's more significant that I've been told by my astrologer, friends, colleagues, is that my Venus is in the eighth house, which is known for like sex, taboo, like a lot of people that get into tantra.
Okay.
In the eighth house.
Interesting.
Like, and like sex, love, intimacy, taboo, darkness.
I love it.
Makes sense.
I love that. Yeah. And I think my Venus in Scorpio is also supposed to be sort of similar. So, okay, I'm not also an astrology expert, but recently I found this out, and there's like this sort of side that I wasn't aware of. So I hope, I'm definitely open to this chat. So yeah, before we start and like really dive in, I'd love to know a bit more about your story and like, how was it you started to become more in tune with your own body? And is this something you've always felt connected to?
Good question. So my journey has been long and varied. And I always, whenever I get this question, I'm like, oh, how to like bring, like what's the key pieces to bring? I mean, I suppose to say that I was on a spiritual journey. There's been various catalysts in my life that have kind of opened me up to that. When I say spiritual, I want to keep that a bit separate from this question around connected, feeling in tune with my body. That has always felt a little bit separate from my spiritual journey up until recently. I had a bit of a catalytic event in 2011, which led me into sort of meditation, manifestation, positive thinking. I started studying with this Buddhist center, opened me up to energy work as well. I started to explore Reiki and different sort of holistic modes of healing, right? Mm-hmm. But on a very kind of surface level, I wasn't sort of diving deep or leaving what was more like mainstream in terms of work and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 2016, my mom passed away, and that just sort of like catapulted me into sort of a deeper kind of like, what is the meaning of life? What is spirit? What is God? Right. Quite existential.
Mm.
Right? Started sort of working with crystals, getting more into Reiki, sound healing, different healing modalities, and starting to really feel on a visceral level how emotion was moving and stuck and suppressed in my body, right? And then this kind of spurred a journey of self-exploration that led me to India. I went to India to learn some deeper modalities. A long story short, Amy, I accidentally, quotation marks, because it's just not an accident. Or like, if I could like line up all the synchronicities of how this happened. But I found myself on a yoga teacher training, and I walked in, and it was Kundalini Tantra yoga teacher training.
Okay.
If you've ever been to a yoga class and then gone to like Kundalini Tantra yoga class, it's a very big difference. Like, particularly if you're in like a community, you're like, oh, I'm not in Kansas anymore. Right? Everyone's like, why they're having like these full body orgasmic experiences, and like, you know, it's really wild. Anyway, I had a Kundalini, my Kundalini woke up, and with that woke up a ton of sexual energy, right? Meaning I was just horny as hell. And you know, I'd never thought of my sexuality in terms of my spiritual journey or my growth journey. It wasn't really on the table, right?
Right.
You know, no, where, right. where, you know, it wasn't really in my awareness. So then I had all this sexual energy. So then I just started like doing all my sort of deviant or like, you know, I say deviant, I mean, I was just like going and masturbating in my room and then
like, yeah.
guy and so I started hooking. I mean, it just felt very stark against this like, wow, this expansive Kundalini experience.
And yeah. then
I was kind of like going and watching porn and things like that. And there's nothing wrong with porn. But what happened is I realized I had this very expansive, visceral feeling of sexual energy.
Yeah.
But then when I actually went to go and give myself orgasm, it was very contracted and hard and stuck. And yeah, and kind of like not this sort of flowy, expansive, present, embodied experience. And I was like, huh, what's missing here? Right. And then that got me really curious. I came back from India and then with all this like rife sexual energy, I was just sort of like, you know, like chasing unavailable men and just doing all this like mad shit to try and like, you know, satisfy this new urge.
Yeah.
And I just thought, okay, like you need to just chill. And I decided to take a vow of conscious celibacy.
Okay.
Not having sex with anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And learn to work with this energy myself. And so I started to create like a self, like really intuitively at first, like a self pleasure practice. So I could start learn to like A, stop using porn. Again, nothing wrong with porn, but for me it was there's nothing wrong with using things if they are tools or aids, but if for me I was reliant on it and it was
right.
keeping me from myself,
mm-hmm.
keeping me from partners. And I was like, I was disassociating with porn, right?
Yeah.
So I went on this journey of celibacy where I started to learn how to just be with my body, right? And I know that was a question about being in tune with my body. That's how it began, like just be with what I'm feeling in my body, right? Mm. A year later, almost a year to the day, I met my first like tantric lover and he sort of like, yeah, and he was really on the path and like we would really sort of like consecrate our love making. He would help me kind of move it up the chakras together.
Wow.
Yeah, like really kind of he was very much like very disciplined and he was very like, you know, he actually went to be like live in a tantra school. So yeah, that kind of just cracked me open up to more. And then the more I got in tune with my body and this like sexuality and the more mm-hmm. I started doing this. Because along the path, I was then teaching meditation, yoga, and then started teaching the divine feminine that came through massively with the Kundalini work, hence Temple of the Feminine. And then it was like sensuality work, then it was sexuality work, and it was just like propelling me into this world.
Mm.
And then I started to like hit all the traumas. So you start to open up your energy body, you're going to find all the blocks and all the pain and all of that stuff. And you know, and if you start to go to work, like face sexuality, you start to face the reasons why it's so suppressed. And so then that led me into like more deeper somatic work and trauma-informed work. And yeah, I went on numerous sort of like intense sacred sexuality intensives as well to kind of like face all of this and crack my body open. And here I am today.
That's so beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing, Amy. That's quite the journey and quite the story. I love it. And even though that was condensed down, I can imagine there were so many intricacies there that happened. And it's really interesting actually, because I was speaking to a friend of mine recently. So this year I actually moved through my own Kundalini awakening as well. This happened in February. And just diving straight in there. So this feels uncomfortable for me to talk to you on a podcast, but just want to share because I think it is important to share. And as you've shared so openly, so in the lead up to my Kundalini awakening, I could already feel energy rising and I was my sexual needs were definitely changing. So I can relate to what you were saying in terms of masturbation. And I was really shamed by that. And actually, it's interesting to hear you say your Kundalini awakening kind of sparked that sexuality and that sexual drive even more, because for me personally, when it happened to me, it kind of leveled out. So it was actually just like in the lead up to it that it was just insane. Like, I didn't know what was really going on. And then it happened. And then it kind of made sense. Cause I was like, huh, like this energy wanted to go somewhere. And it's definitely changed. It's just definitely changed the way I relate to my body, because I do feel, I don't know, I guess I still feel some of that shame of wanting to self-pleasure because of what we've been told and because of society. And I don't know, it's just a very complex relationship I have with it. But the Kundalini stuff definitely did help me to connect more with my body, because in a sense that I had to, because it just needed to get out. So from your perspective, I would love to know why you think we hold so much shame, especially for women, around our sexual empowerment. I'm sure you have lots of thoughts on that.
yeah, I do. And I kind of wanted to add, and, you know, I don't know whether it's worth just putting a kind of content warning around sexual trauma, but I just wanted to add in my path, like, what I realized when I stopped suppressing my relationship to sexuality is like how much harm and trauma I had experienced that had been so normalized. And the normalization of it is trauma itself. Like, it's so painful, right? And so just to come back to your question, it's like, you know, and I use this word trauma, and it's not to put experiences in people's lives and mouths and you know, but, you know, for me, like, trauma is the, you know, an experience that puts your body into fight, flight, or freeze around something that makes that you perceive as dangerous or unsafe, right?
Yeah.
Kind of locks there, like it locks in the body. And, you know, the mere fact of most of us have had like an omission of talks held around sexy, talks around healthy sexuality and pleasure, right? The absence of that can just fill the void with shame and confusion, distortion, right? So we've got like a real absence, you know, and I'm talking about like in sex education can often be very fear-based. We're literally only now getting glimmers of this notion that sex education might be getting a bit more expansive, right? I know I've got nieces, they're definitely not having classes about how to connect to their pleasure,
right?
How to name their genitals, what the name of your genitals are, right? Vagina, but where's the clitoris? Like, these things are not being, this is why, you know, I'm teaching them to I'm learning them. We're grown women learning them, right? So even the fact that it's like, you're not being taught it. It's like, well, there's something I'm not supposed to be doing here, right?
Totally.
Taught it. And, you know, and parents aren't really filling in the gap because it's generational. We're not really taught ownership of our body and our pleasure or safe ways to explore it. And then there's like the real trauma, right? The kind of, A, we receive messages in the media that, you know, sexual women are going to be attacked, or, you know, like sexual attack is rife. And, you know, and then we receive these distorted messages around like being sexy means that you're a worthy woman, but actually having sex means you're unworthy, like this slut shaming, but also this shaming of like withholding and being frigid. Like, women's sexuality is just judged endlessly. Totally. How are we supposed to have like this pure, healthy relationship with it, right?
Yeah.
And then there's like these, all these sort of like micro and macro like violations to the body, you know, like being touched when we don't want to, being encouraged to hug your uncle when you're little. I don't want to, you know, hold like it's not really up to you. You know, a lot of British culture, then we start having sex when we're drunk or on drugs, right? So the body, we're not really conscious. We're not really with our body. Not really in consent. And then even we start to then, you know, because of all this distortion around sex, all these sort of messages that we see around what it means to be a sexual woman, and that, you know, whether it's safe, whether it's unsafe, and how we're all really trying to work that out inside in the psyche, right? There's no real safe spaces to work this out, right? And so we're really unpacking, like holding all of that, right, in the body, in the psyche, in the subconscious. And then, you know, what we do is we go into our sexual relationships and we don't know our own pleasure. We don't know like what our needs are, right? And we maybe like step into that people pleaser or that performer. And then again, we're kind of like abandoning our body because we end up having sexual experiences that probably aren't really in our embodied truth.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so just kind of almost all these things kind of gather up and cement and create this relationship to sexuality that doesn't feel empowering and expansive.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's so much in that, isn't there? I think you're spot on, really. I think in terms of all the sort of shaming culture and like societal norms that we grow up with and we don't even question. And I think, yeah, I think certainly for me, when I had this sort of Kundalini moment this year, it sort of definitely made me reflect on some of those pieces that you were just saying, like, do I know what like I actually want from my own body and like my own needs? Probably not really. I've never really, it's kind of sad when you think about it. I've never really thought or questioned it before. It's just, I guess, yeah, it's just what I've been used to, or thinking about partners and what they would like. And actually, I think that's why for me, that shame piece was such a weird thing to look at, because I'd never thought about it before. I'd never sort of wanted to be in my own space or with my own body. And that's like insane. I'm nearly 32 years of age, and I'm just starting to explore that. So I think the work that you're doing is amazing, because I mean, if that had happened at an earlier age, then potentially, you know, I don't know what my sexual life would be like. I've been married for a long time, but I don't know. I think it would have looked different. And I think it's great to be open to more things. And I think in a sense, we are becoming a little more open, aren't we? I don't know if you feel that, Amy, like, especially on social media. And I know you're very present on social media, and it's a great way to kind of get people to feel empowered about their own bodies. And there's been a lot of talk and buzz, I guess is okay to say, around the yoni. I know you like to say the pussy as well. I would love to, and before we started to talk on this podcast, like before we click record, you know, you were saying more about the pussy, and I said even saying it out loud feels strange. So maybe we can just unpack a little bit about the pussy itself.
Yeah, of course, let's. And I think, you know, Amy, it's really important that you share that, because the language is really important that we use, right? Mm-hmm. You know, as I shared around, you know, why we are where we are, like we haven't really been taught the names and the words, and, you know, the word, a lot of the words for genitals, pussy, cock, you know, cunt, right? Mm. These are words that refer to the genitals, female genitals, male genitals, whatever, that are used as insults, really serious insults.
Right.
You're so like, true. What kind of message are you sending, right? And then the words that we have been given, vagina, vulva, right? The two are very different. We often don't know that, right? They're not even really used, right? People mm-hmm. they can feel quite clinical.
Yeah.
Even medical professionals won't say it. Like, how many times have we heard like down there or below, or, you know, what's happening, you know, just like a little nudge, right? But I think actually owning the language that works for you is important. How can you communicate to a partner what you want to happen to that body part if you can't even say it?
Yeah. Right?
Like, and you don't know what's what, right? And so I've been on my own journey with like reclaiming these different words. Yoni is a Sanskrit word, right? And so in my explorations that just were naturally in like the kind of Kundalini Tantra I did was like a Hindu lineage. And we weren't, that wasn't directly sexual energy work. It's what we call like white Tantra, right? But I started to explore red Tantra, which talks more about sex and using sex as a spiritual practice. And so the word yoni was coming up then, right? And yoni is a Sanskrit word that essentially relates to the entire female genitalia.
Okay.
And I think that's a really beautiful inroad, right? It's a lot of women find that safe word. It's beautiful. It hasn't been hijacked as an insult, right? So it feels like a nice way.
Yeah.
You know, and vulva, they're technical, but they feel clunky when you just want to like express the entire genital area, pelvic area, right?
Yeah.
Yoni is a really beautiful word. But I really like reclaiming like pussy and puss. Like puss sounds really cute when you kind of get away from that insult and have this more notion of like, yeah, like my puss, right? Like it's just this kind of a more purring, fluffy, soft, whatever it, like whatever you associate with, right? But finding the right word for you is really important. And I think, you know, there's this book, amazing book called Pussy, a Reclamation by Regina. I can never remember her surname. I'm really sorry. We can add it to the note.
That's all right, yeah.
She's amazing. Mama Gina on Instagram. She's just literally a powerhouse. She's a pioneer in this work. And she's brought pussy to the forefront, right? And so, you know, pussy and cock feel like just really easy and normal, natural words. Like they're of my generation.
Yeah.
You know, I've kind of like peeled myself away from the insult of them, or like the garishness. Like there's also this notion that like being explicit about sex is somehow like rude, or you know, like a, what would we call it? Like
we're quite prudish, aren't we? I think in the UK, I'm such a prude. Yeah. I can't help it. I really want to be more open, but it's like ingrained in us to be prudish. And I think, it's hard to get reprogrammed. I think.
I think when we see people that are speaking like really directly, we think they're being brash or or somehow like crass. You know, that kind of word. Like, where do we go? Like, we're grown adults using these words to refer, like, that aren't medical terms. That's quite a normal thing to do. You know, it's quite a grown-up thing to do. Like, my pussy, right? Your cock. Like, how, you know. But finding the right language is important for you, for the individual. Yeah. Important, because if you're cringing at the word you're using, it's not going to feel empowering.
Right.
So going with what feels empowering. And I like just normalizing these words. And I think because the more I've been exposed to them, the more I'm like, it makes sense, you know?
And I think if we don't say it out loud, or if we don't speak, then I think that's also a thing, isn't it? We kind of suppress how we feel, especially I think as a lot of British people are listening to this podcast. I know it's like, I live in the Netherlands now, actually, and I really, really love the fact that they're very direct and they say how they feel. And I think I've sort of tried to find a balance now between being British and living in the Netherlands, where I think in the UK we're still very prudish and we are very proud and punctual and polite all the time. And I think it's really tough to sort of say what you feel and express what you need. And I think that can go also for some of these terms, and actually like just hearing you speak more, then my body was just sort of like relaxing into everything, and just it feels okay and it feels safe. And I think there's something really powerful in that, just to express and say the name of your genitalia. Especially as women. I mean, I would say penis, but I wouldn't necessarily say pussy. And what does that have to say about everything?
Yeah, totally. And that's totally okay. But as long as we find the word that that does work.
Right.
Because we've got to have some language for our body, you know? Yeah, for sure.
So why do you think, Amy, it's important for us to find some of that, love for ourselves, less shame, and bring more intimacy with ourselves again? Why is that important?
Oh, I mean, you know, you're like your sexual energy, if I just like reflecting back to the part where I said about, you know, it's alive in us from children, like it's our aliveness, our life force, right? You know, just being cut off from that is like such a huge source of power, right? And if you just think about, you know, how much work, like self-growth work we do on ourselves, and how empowered we end up feeling doing it. And imagine you've got this whole section of your life, this like most, like one of the most important parts of our lives, because it's literally how the human race continues to grow, right? Through sex. And that's kind of like an important point, but it's not by all means, it's not the only point, because sex is not just for reproductive purposes, right? But we've been given this body that has the potential for experiencing all this energy and all this pleasure and all this orgasm, right? And to not tap into that and access that, right? I think that just says a lot. Like to go through our whole human existence being given this, like, you know, if it wasn't like a God-given or whatever your kind of spiritual beliefs around who we are and where we come from, why was our body made like this? You know, and our bodies are made to feel like this amazing, like transcendental, like pleasure, you know. At the point of orgasm, it's almost like you're in between two worlds, right? You know, orgasmic energy, like when you're in it, is like a place of no mind, you know. Monks meditate for hours on the top of cave or like cliffs or like in caves to reach a place of no mind, yet you can get there by self-pleasuring and learning. You can even learn to like prolong your orgasmic energy and reach the state of no mind. You can get insights, and you know, even without it being this spiritual esoteric, it's like, look at all the suppression and shame and harm and distortion that sexuality has created in your own life and being. Unpacking that, healing that, reclaiming your body, you know, sex and pleasure is had through the body. One of the biggest hurdles that women have around their sexuality is like the insecurities that we have around our body and our body image. And that's huge, right? That's huge, again, like how indoctrinated that's been into us. And still find that piece as well. Like a lot of people on the spiritual journey still stuck in the body image matrix because it runs so deep. I don't think it ever leaves. It's so big, right? So all these things are like, you know, like coming into your full power is like embracing yourself as a sexual being in whatever way is true to you, right? That's the really important part. Again, it's important not to get stuck into that trap where we're just exchanging one blueprint for another blueprint, or instead of blueprint, because blueprint feels like more of a positive aspiration, like an imprint. So you know, sometimes the sacred sexuality space can almost imprint this notion that you have to be like fully juicy and open and orgasmic and like having multiple orgasms all the time. And it's like, you know what, it doesn't even have to run that deep. It's just coming into right relationship with sexuality for yourself, right, in a way that feels good and empowering. There are amazing sexually empowered beings that are asexual on Instagram, like that are really just like, yeah, you know. And it's like, that's all it is, like bringing this part of you into the light. And finding the parts that are feeling the pain and the hurt and the, you know, from the past or the shame, and tending to them and nurturing them, right? So that you can come into relationship with these parts of yourself in the way that is right for you.
Yeah, beautiful. I think that's so important. Everything that you just said there, especially around sort of accepting yourself and your body. And yeah, like you said, it is a journey and it is a process. And I think, I'm sort of only just, to be honest, wholeheartedly getting there this year because of, maybe it was this sort of experience that I had around the sort of Kundalini rising. But I think there's so many elements to it of just trying more to just accept, you know, or not even accept, but just actually love my body for what it is and not trying to make it fit like this sort of image that I have, which is, I know that you said you work in the yoga space as well, and so do I. And I think that's also has been quite a toxic, you know, piece of how we should look in the yoga space. So it's just, I guess it is just a journey. And I think especially for women as well, we have a lot of advertising and media that says we should be a certain way, and actually, yeah, going against the grain could be really, really tough. But I love the fact that it is a process, and just trying to, accept your body for who it is and love it more, I think, is a great message.
Yeah, for sure.
I would love to know, Amy, maybe we can dive into some more saucy sauciness.
Yeah,
I'm sure you're happy to do that. So I noticed on your Instagram as well, you often share like tips and practices to open your sacred sexuality. So I think you use sometimes things for the yoni. Maybe you can just tell me a bit more about that, because I would actually love to know. I'm very open to hearing.
Yeah, of course. So yeah, I mean, I sell crystal pleasure wands,
right?
Yoni eggs, right? I am changing the shop up a little bit, right? So I want to speak more specifically maybe to the crystal ones.
Yeah, I'd love to know what they do. I don't know too much about it. So yeah.
I mean, the crystal ones are essentially, right? So you may have heard of vibrators, right? So I'll explain. So when I started I used to have a vibrator. I had the Rampant Rabbit.
Yeah.
Did you know it, right?
I remember that.
Yeah, it's made famous from Sex and the City.
Yeah.
And yeah, I loved it, right? And that at that time, I wasn't on this path. So my masturbation practice was very sort of goal-orientated, very frictional. It's just press this against this and eventually something will happen, right? And that's really beautiful, right? And I love that I had that. And it took me quite a few years to learn how to orgasm myself. And so I was really pleased to have that experience, right? Because I appreciate some people are yet to experience orgasm. And I say it like that because you will, right? If you engage in certain practices and commit, you will experience orgasm. It's quite widely accepted in every sort of sexuality professional that not experiencing orgasm is a psychosomatic response as opposed to like a physical, there's very rarely a physical reason as to why you're not orgasming, right?
Interesting.
Share that for those who are listening. So I had this vibrator. It just turns out that I left it at a flat that I moved out of in the top drawer of my lap. I just did not have the guts to be like, yeah, can you just pluck it out and post it to me? So I was like, yeah, just throw it away. It's just, yeah, let's not think about that. And then when I went on this celibacy path, and I just used my hands anyway, so I was just having clitoral orgasms. When I went on this celibacy path and I started to explore, it's like I was feeling this energy in different parts of my body. So I was like, there's got to be more than just this sort of like clitoral stimulation. So I was starting to experience orgasm in different ways. And I knew I didn't want the intensity of a vibrator, but I wanted some fullness in my vagina. I wanted penetration. I wanted to sort of experience pleasure inside my vagina. And so I had already been working with crystals, right? And so I found these like crystal wands.
Yeah.
And I started using the crystal wand as well. Right? And it just works. I mean, the crystals have subtle properties to them, right? So, and that's important. But overall, you know, this is a tool for penetration, right?
Okay.
And massage and inner stimulation, right? Mm-hmm. So what the kind of crystal quality adds to it is it allows you to kind of bring more intentionality, right? When we come back to this notion of like sexual energy, right? Energy moves, right? It's almost like you can think of sexual energy almost like Reiki energy through your body.
Mm.
You can move it to kind of heal and expand and like clear things, right? And so setting an intention for what you want that energy to do.
Love it.
Yeah. It's like a completely new way of being with yourself, right? It's a completely new way of experiencing self-pleasure and, you know, bridging that gap between sex being something like sordid and dirty.
Yeah.
Which I think getting okay with it being sordid and dirty is also really healing, but also knowing that sex is like really pure and innocent and healing too.
Yeah.
I quite like the both, right? In the beginning of the journey, sometimes it's really helpful and handy to like lean into the innocence, but then also I think then get to the point where it's like, it's okay to be filthy, right? Okay too, right? But yeah, so the crystal wands allow for those who want to come off the stimulation of a vibrator, because vibrators aren't addictive in a physical sense, right? It's not like your body, like it's not like so some people sort of tout this idea that vibrators are going to kind of like kill the nerve endings and end your orgasmic potential, and that's not true. There's no research for that, but we are habitual, and we create these like neurological pathways, right? So if we've got this intense vibration that brings us to orgasm, right, we're going to have like this, the brain is just going to be like, well, I need intensity to get there.
Right.
And it can be harder when A, we want to move energy, like work with the move. It's really hard to move your energy if you've got this like.
Yeah, that's true.
It's quite distracting. All the energy is just going to go there, right?
Mm.
And it's also can be harder than with partners to experience pleasure and the depth of pleasure. Right. So for me, coming off vibrators was a no-brainer. I didn't have one anyway. So the more increased the sensitivity of my body by connecting to it and by regularly practicing and exploring my pleasure, the less intensity I needed. And so, but I wanted the fullness inside my vagina, right? So the crystal wands offer an alternative to that. And they allow for self-pleasure to become a ritual where you can use it for healing, where you can use it for your spiritual journey, where you can use it for your growth.
Mm.
They also allow us to allow practices like internal massage and de-armoring. So we store trapped energy and emotion in the body. Very easy way of understanding this is like, if you're stressed, your shoulders might be tight. So you'll go for a massage, right? Imagine how much you're storing in the vagina.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Imagine how much tightness, contraction, stress, the times that we've kind of clamped up because
we've
been, consenting, smear tests that we haven't, like examinations, all those mm-hmm. sorts of things, right? So also a lot of women experience numbness in the vagina because of that. The vagina, you know, the vagina is like its own consciousness, its own part of the body. If it's like, I don't feel safe to be open, it's going to kind of slam shut. Through very conscious, intentional, loving practices like internal massage and de-armoring, which is almost the name is like removing the emotional armor that's been built up to protect. So these ones support that. And it allows you to kind of bring back sensation, invite back pleasure, invite back feeling, use a sort of slower, more intentional, more expansive and mindful way of being with pleasure and orgasm.
Yeah, that's amazing. Thank you, Amy, for sharing more about the crystal wands, because I've seen you use them on Instagram and not like actually use them, but just like not x-rated content, but just holding them up and like seeing them, even they looked really beautiful. But I think it's nice to have more of a deep dive description of what they can do, because I was kind of hoping that you would share that it is more around that intentionality of connecting, because I think that's so lovely. And actually it's just like, it should be, you know, connect. And that's what I've been feeling on my own journey of sexuality as well. In it, I'm still definitely unpacking that, and I think this conversation is already helping me. But it's like, we shouldn't feel shame to touch or pleasure ourselves, because it's us. It's ultimately us, isn't it? It's our body. And like, if we can't love ourselves, then, you know, that's that RuPaul quote, isn't it? If we can't love ourselves, how the hell are you going to love anyone else? And it's kind of true.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it starts with us. You know, a lot of the time we outsource our pleasure and we expect a partner to know what we want and what we like, or to give us pleasure, right? Mm-hmm. But really the pleasure happens from us. And, you know, like, we should be showing our partners how to pleasure us and how to love us, right?
Yeah.
And you shouldn't just save pleasure for being in an intimate partnership. Right. And even when we're in an intimate partnership, we can still be in pleasure on our own. Right. It's not a finite source. Right. Until you sort of end of life, you know, your pleasure is just infinite. I get there's infinite access there.
Yeah. Amazing. Well, I've loved chatting to you, Amy. And maybe just before we close, have you got any sort of anything else you'd like to share? Maybe for people that are sort of listening to this and feel ready to go off and explore their own sexuality, or anything else you'd like to share it, or any tips?
Yeah, well, if you get yourself a wand from my shop, then you get access to an online portal of resources of how to use it and start a kind of like self-pleasure practice. And wand aside, I would start exploring a self-pleasure practice for yourself. Like, it's the biggest tool, and really look into like what that means and develop some sort of like tools. You know, a lot of people are already on their spiritual journey, yoga, breathwork, meditation. Bring that into your self-pleasure practice. Bring that in terms of like, make self-pleasure a meditation.
Love it. Thank you so much, Amy. I've really enjoyed chatting to you today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And for opening up this beautiful conversation and being so open and sharing parts of your journey too. Appreciate that.
Oh, thanks, Amy.
Thank you for listening to the Magic and Mindfulness podcast, the podcast designed for the modern mystic and spiritually curious. This season, creative production is by Emily Lasbury and co-production by George Lasbury. If you'd like to stay connected to what we're up to, make sure you follow us on Instagram at Magic and Mindfulness, and maybe share these episodes with a friend or give us a review or subscribe on your podcast platform of choice. This helps us to keep spreading the message and light work that we do. We appreciate every single one of you that tunes in. So stay well, stay safe, and see you soon.